Welcome, everybody, and good morning. Welcome, everybody, and good morning. Today is January 2nd. It's Wednesday. It's 5 minutes after 10. We're 5 minutes late getting on. We had difficulty today getting on. Our lines are packed. Literally, I am totally shocked. We have before us today almost the same number of people online on the website as we do by the end of the day. Our lines are jammed. People are lining up on the switchboard that have been designated as only listening into the show. So we've got a lot to do today, and we've got a lot to cover. But the most important thing is to welcome everybody to the show and to welcome you to the new year. It's 2013. I'm very, very excited about the prospects for a new year and hope to get some directives from the administration as to where they're going. I know that the biggest thing to hit the nation and the world, of course, is that accommodation over the fiscal cliff that we were thinking we might go over, but evidently it didn't work out as badly as some people had suspected, and so thank goodness for that. But I'm not quite sure exactly what it is that we passed, so I really don't know if it should be a thank goodness or not. But it seems that whatever the case is, you know, again, like I think I told you this yesterday, I don't have, it's beyond my pay grade to figure out if this is correct or not. So I have to hope that the people that agreed on this piece of paper, on this document, which is going to be signed by the president today, is for the better of the nation. And certainly the financial markets have gone almost crazy in anticipation because I was so engaged in trying to get us online. I didn't have an opportunity to see what's happening over at the on the market. So let's just see if we can get here, if we can get some information, just what's happening on the market. So we'll see if we can get something here. And the stock futures looked absolutely wild. Hold on a second. We'll find out who this is. Bear with me a moment. Good morning, Hezzy here. Hi. Can we make it quick? Unfortunately, I'm on the air, but nobody can hear you at the other end. Oh, okay. And how are you doing? All right. You just take care of yourself. And thanks for telling me. Be well. Bye. Okay, folks. I am sorry for that interruption, but it needed to be done. And only because of what's transpiring later on in the day. And so that's the story there. Well, unbelievable. Let's see what this looks like. The Dow Jones Industrial Averages shot up. So can you imagine the market is now standing at 13,368.5 and the Standard & Poor's. So that's a 264-point rise in the morning hour. This is only at 10:09. So you can, evidently, it seems as the markets are just thrilled. They're beside themselves. This is almost like the best thing they've ever had. It almost feels like when you're on a restricted diet that you're able to get a 7-layer cake and enjoy every mouthful. Well, what can I say? So that's the story there, and that's what's happening with Bloomberg News, and they tell us what's really happening in the market. So very interesting. One of the most other signs important to us here locally for the Westchester on the Level audience is what's happening here with regard to and the aftermath of that. There was a notice presented. This is what it is. We got a notice from Nita Lowey's office, the congresswoman, and in that press notice, which just came out, it says Democrats and Republicans from states affected by Superstorm Sandy will speak on the House floor during the morning hours beginning at 10 o'clock regarding the House Republican leadership's shameful refusal to hold a vote on assistance for families, businesses, and communities affected by Superstorm Sandy. Now, following passage of the Biden-McConnell compromise averting the fiscal cliff last night, Republican leadership adjourned the 112th Congress sine die without acting on Senate-passed emergency disaster relief appropriation bill. Let's see if we can hook up into what's going on through C-SPAN. With us a moment. Let's just see if we can find out.
50,000 unnecessary deaths each year in the United States.
Okay, well, this at the moment is someone else, so we're going to put that to the side. That's Representative Clifford Stearns, and let's just see here. This is definitely the divide. Oh, I see. Forgive me. The debate, even though the press release mentions that the debate will take place at 10 o'clock, in reality, it is now expected to be debated at 10:22 this morning. So we're going to go there when that happens. And so hopefully we'll be able to find our way back to that particular point, which is really important. Then what else is also important, and that is one other thing. Bear with me a moment here. Just bear with me a second here. I've got to get to the other site. It turns out that at 9:30 this morning, the city of Yonkers is returning to the federal courthouse, to the state. It's the New York State Supreme Courthouse, to the Court of Justice Sam Walker, the Honorable Sam Walker, and they're going to discuss whether to continue the temporary restraining order that was that prohibited the city of Yonkers from removing the fire department from the city's emergency medical services. And this is literally an unbelievable fight. There are contractual agreements that that bolster the position of the fire department in their quest to maintain their first responder status within the city. And yet, at the same time, the administration, that of City Hall, that of Mayor Mike, when they wanted to literally, and this seems to be the case, I don't see any action whatsoever that denotes in any way, shape, or form that the administration is not looking to crush and destroy, totally manhandle. Now, there may be issues, of course, and there are always with regard to contractual agreements, but what's interesting is that from the very beginning, despite all the promises of that Mayor Mike Spano claims that he did not make, the bottom line is that for the past year, either through his own efforts or that of the deputy mayor, the bottom line is that they're looking to totally destroy the fire department's power and their grasp on their contractual agreements. But evidently so far, the fire department has won their way, because let's face it, folks, whether we like it or not, this is a nation of law, and there are contractual agreements. And what's so interesting is that when one looks at it, whether one agrees with the fire department or whether one agrees with City Hall or whether one does not agree with City Hall or whether one does not agree with the fire department, what is important is that it's interesting how the city of Yonkers can be so hell-bent on breaking the contracts that they have with their fire department, whereas on the other hand, when it comes to the egregious actions of developers and friends and family, contracts that were afforded them can never seem to be clawed back, and they whine away and say, "My God, look at what's going on," and they make believe that it really matters to them when it doesn't matter at all. Hey, let's face it, we still haven't gotten an answer to when are we going to stop paying for the 10-year deal for paying electric for XL. Only an answer from City Hall as to what they've done. The contractual agreements giving a subsidy of $150,000 a year to Zupa, $200,000 a year to X2O, similar contracts to Silvio's Panchito's, among others. This is what's being spent to subsidize their ability to maintain their doors open. These are contracts for 10 years. 10 years. X2O will make $2 million on the deal. No way for the city to break the contract, so they claim. There's no way to break any contract that's ever been written when it benefits the city of Yonkers, but when it benefits somebody else, they can't seem to break the contracts. They can't seem to do anything. They're always stymied. You have to really wonder if our corporation council in the past has ever had their head on straight, or if they really required somebody else to put their head on their shoulders so that maybe we would get somewhere. And evidently it does seem that when it was a requirement for corporation counsel in past administrations under John Spencer and Phil Amaconi to do what was right for the city, they took their head off and somebody else put their head on their body. And guess what? They signed the papers. They agreed to everything. That's why we're in the state of chaos that we're in. Wasn't it the administration? They don't control the Board of Education, but let's face it, folks. The Board of Education tried to pull a fast one on the city by giving the Board of Education Superintendent of Schools, Bernard Ferrazzi, a 6-year contract. If we didn't mention it, nobody would have said anything. And thankfully for us, the Inspector General was right there with her whip and said, "Boy, I can't do that. Go back and get it right." And when you do, you could say thank you. And that's exactly what they did. So they reduced the contract from an illegal 6-year to a, as far as I'm concerned, an offensive 5-year contract, because there was no need to extend a contract for a superintendent whose contract did not expire. Go figure. But that's Yonkers when you want to screw the people and the public good. And that's exactly what they've done. So very, very indignant of the administration to go on and on and on, making believe that they're doing the right thing, when in reality they have to get engaged in a contractual settlement and they have to sit down and work their differences out. And the problem, you will see at the end of the day, unless they work out some sort of crazy deal, because everyone's going to be embarrassed by it, and therefore we won't know what's going on anyway, which is, I guess, the intention of all sides, is they're going to have a deal, they're going to work it out, it'll be in the dark room, nobody will know anything, and we will continue along this way. And I guarantee you that this administration, Mike Spano, will be so angered and so disgusted for every loss that he will make that he will never, ever forget that it was the firefighters that literally challenged his rules and his rule over them, and the fact that he has a wide smile is not going to evidently is not appeasing the fire department, and it's not going to turn out to look good, that's for sure. And I wonder how much longer the city will tolerate going through this process where every time they make a turn, which is their fault, let's face it, there was no request for proposal to get someone to take over the first responder status. Nobody. No request for proposal. This was rammed. Empress is a friend of the family. That's it. Just that. Oh, let's see. Let's see what happens. Evidently, there's something that came out of the city of Yonkers. We'll see what happened here. Oh, it's amazing the crap that they put out. Just amazing. Here it is on January 2, and all that we can get out of City Hall is that there's a request for proposal for acquisition and redevelopment of former School 19. Unbelievable. It just doesn't quit, does it? Unbelievable. It's funny. All of a sudden, they're looking for a request for proposal for the redevelopment of the former School 19. I thought they had people who were interested in this. What's the problem? You'll see they're pulling the same stuff. They don't like the developers that are on the scene. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see why these people who want to develop School 19 are committed to do so when Shemesh had no money backing them up, not even a dime, and no promotion and no backing from the city to get money backing. So he got $1 million for his project, despite the fact that the predominantly African-American community in the first district where he wants to build, he wants to not only build and revitalize the Glen Power Station, but at the same time, he also wants to unearth and uncover the park, Trevor Park. You know, they're always doing everything backwards. You know why? Because they are the administration, this Yonkers City Council, City Hall, is dismissive of the city council and dismissive of the people, and it shows. It just shows. Let's see what's happening. Yes, here it is. Let's listen in a little bit, if we may, to what's going on at...
gentleman from New York, Mr. Crowley, for 3 minutes.
Mr. Crowley from New York. This is C-SPAN Morning Hour.
Last night, Republican leadership reneged on their commitment to vote on aid for the families in the state that were devastated by Superstorm Sandy. We were told it's because Republicans, we were told it was because Republicans just couldn't stomach any additional votes in this Congress. I wonder if those same people walked along the beaches of Long Beach, Long Island, Breezy Point, and Bell Harbor, and Rockaway Beach, Greg Meeks' district, Seaside Heights in New Jersey, if they could stomach the devastation they would witness, stomach the lives that were lost, stomach the homes that have been destroyed, or the families that have been displaced, that are closed in many places. In weeks after the storm, my Republican colleagues told us, not all, by the way, I want to point out that Mr. Grimm and Mr. King and Mr. Dole and others were very, very helpful. But the leadership I'm talking about told us they were with us and that they would support us. But I guess those are only words, because last night we learned the truth. And thanks to their actions, there's no additional federal assistance to help hardworking people rebuild and restart their lives. Now, I'm not a cynic, but I do wonder, what if we told Republicans that a few millionaires and billionaires' lives were destroyed by this storm, whether they'd want to help all the families hurting because of Sandy? And I wonder, what if Republicans were promised that by providing aid to families in need, that in turn, that they would get a tax break? Would these incentives have changed their mind? Would it have prompted action? Because it truly does appear their only priority is helping those that have the most. Republicans in Congress brought this House to a new low last night. The banner of the Speaker's chair says, "In God we trust." God alone cannot help these families rebuild, but unfortunately, the American people cannot trust the Republican Congress to help either. The only thing my Republican colleagues did this week was to serve up false hope to people who have been devastated by this storm, false promises, false guarantees that we'd be there to help them in their time of need. Many of you know that my cousin John Moran, I don't speak about John often, he came from the Rockaway community. There was a monument on the beach, on Beach 118th Street. There were, I would say, dozens of monuments, as Congressman Meeks knows, along the Rockaway Peninsula. They were destroyed by Hurricane Sandy. It didn't stop my family and his neighbors to go out and sift through the feet of sand, to find that memorial. It was that precious to them. They didn't wait for the federal government to come help pull them up by their bootstraps. They did it themselves. They continue to do it. They're humble people, proud people throughout this entire region that have been affected by this. They will recover. But sadly to say, no thanks to the 112th Congress.
Time has expired. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Illinois, Mr. Dold, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today, and I know we've talked a lot and heard from my colleagues about Sandy, and I certainly want to talk about that. I want to talk about last night we were able to avoid the fiscal cliff. The American public, at least the constituents that I talk to on a regular basis, are looking for certainty. They're looking for us to find common ground. They're looking for us to be able to move the country forward. I'm a small business owner, Mr. Speaker. I meet a budget and a payroll. I employ 100 people. For me, that's 100 families. It's a role and responsibility that I take very seriously. And while I do believe that the federal government should play a role possible in the lives of Americans, they do need to play a role. They need to be able to provide those things that Americans cannot provide themselves, whether that be infrastructure, whether that be a common defense, justice. These are some of the things that I think we do share a lot of common ground with. Now, Mr. Speaker, I spent some time in Long Island, New York recently, and also in New Jersey. The devastation that Sandy has caused that region is nothing short of remarkable. And while I do believe that we have a spend problem that has been going on, frankly, in this House on both sides of the aisle for a long time, there are those times when we need to come together as an American people and say, we have Americans out there that cannot provide for themselves, that have been devastated, that need a helping hand. I think they will repay that. I do. We have an opportunity, Mr. Speaker, to come together as Americans, Republicans and Democrats together, to try to help provide need. My colleague Joe Crowley was just up here talking about the devastation that happened on the beaches. Michael Grimm, and I'm sure most of the New York and New Jersey delegations, which will precede me here, and those from Connecticut, will talk about the devastation that was happening in their communities. I do believe that we have a role to play, and I do believe that action needs to happen and happen quickly. Now, there are many on my side of the aisle that believe that we shouldn't be spending a nickel more than we have to. And while I agree that we need to tighten spending and that this body needs to treat spending and those dollars as if it were their own, we can't needlessly ask taxpayers to provide more resources in to have them squandered. Let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, these dollars will not be squandered. I believe that they are desperately needed at a time when many Americans have lost hope. There is that opportunity for us to stand united together, provide that hope for the American public. It may be New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and Pennsylvania today, but it may be a different part of the country tomorrow. Now, as we look forward, Mr. Speaker, as the 112th Congress comes to a close, we have a heck of a lot more work to be done as a country. And I for one, hope that we can talk about reining the out-of-control spending. But that, again, it's not going to happen with one party or the other. It's going to happen about bipartisanship.
Listening to what's going on in C-SPAN, this is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezi Harris. So while we actually await, I will try to filter through those representatives that come out of our area, out of West County, and in the hope that we will be able to hear them discuss this particular issue, that is the issue of not funding or not even taking a vote on the necessary funds needed to revive the that was caused by Hurricane Sandy. And that impacts New York State, of course, as you all well know, Connecticut and New Jersey. Much of the infrastructure has been destroyed, and so many other things are necessary. People need to be able to get out of the mess. There have been literally communities that have been wiped out by the hurricane force that that Sandy brought into town. And it took weeks and weeks and weeks, and we still haven't fixed it all. So that's what's interesting that's going on. So we'll try to listen in, look on the side while this is happening and see where things are. And just go from there. Interestingly enough, the markets are still doing very well. They're up to 257 points up. Wow, they're up to 13,361. Let's see, it turns out that the Yonkers City Hall has issued some sort of a revision. Don't know fully. I don't have the mental capacity to be watching the C-SPAN. Oh, wait, here it is. This is for us. Listen in.
17 million Americans who were devastated by Hurricane Sandy, one of the worst storms in U.S. history more than 9 weeks ago. The Senate has sent us a good bill. We are ready to act. We have the bipartisan votes to pass it, and yet the House Republican leadership has said there will be no votes today. The last thing to pass this legislation without delay before we have to start all over again in the new session of Congress tomorrow. Let me be very clear. Republican leadership has turned their backs on New Yorkers. They've turned their backs on those suffering without homes, businesses, struggling just to get by. They have no valid reason for delay, only the dysfunction with which they lead this body. This record storm resulted in the death of over 100 Americans. The coasts of New Jersey, New York, Connecticut have been devastated. Other surrounding states have sustained significant damage. In 2005, this body came together, passed a federal disaster assistance bill to help the Gulf recover from Hurricane Katrina 2 weeks after the storm. Congress acted to assist those who suffered in Hurricane Gustav, Ike. Within 1 month, the governors of our states, Democrat and Republican, have assessed over $82 billion in damages. The Senate bill would have provided $60.4 billion, not everything that was requested, but a detailed, thoughtful disaster assistance plan to help these communities rebuild. More than 9 weeks since the storm hit, House Republican leadership is doing nothing after giving us nearly virtual assurance just yesterday that we would consider this assistance bill today. When a disaster hits on American soil, we as a Congress have the responsibility and tradition of working together, Democrat and Republican, to help communities rebuild. Our citizens are counting on us to help them recover from this storm and mitigate future disasters. I respectfully urge House leadership to reconsider their decision. Support the victims of Hurricane Sandy. Put politics aside. Do the right thing. People are waiting. People need this assistance. Let's bring the bill to a vote today.
Gentlelady's time is expired. Chair recognizes the gentleman from New York, Mr. King, for 5 minutes.
All right, we're going to listen to
Thank you for your service during your time in Congress, and thank you very much for your remarks here this morning. I think it's important to set the record straight. Last night, many of us came to the floor and right the conduct of the Republican leadership. It was in defense. It's important to lay out the facts as to how we view the situation. So we're not just put in the position of name calling or somehow we're angry or our feelings are hurt. This goes far beyond any of that. The fact is, as Congresswoman Lowy said, within 10 days after Katrina, $60 billion. That number ended up going well over $100 billion. There's now 9 weeks, and nothing has been appropriated at all by this Congress for the people of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Long Island, which I represent. And the fact is that over the last 5, 6, 7 weeks, we did everything that the Republican leadership asked us to do. Governor Cuomo came down. I was at the meeting. He met with the Speaker. Governor Christie came down. He met with the Speaker. Mayor Bloomberg came down. He met with the majority leader. We were asked to submit detailed documentation. Governor Christie, Governor Cuomo, Mayor Bloomberg all submitted absolute documentation. When we asked, is anything else, you've given us all we need. When the bill came from the Senate, we were told there was some pork in the bill. That was taken out of the bill. The bill that was going to be voted on in the House floor is what the Republican leadership asked us to do. Let me just say at this time, in my dealings with them, Majority Leader Cantor has been very straightforward, very direct. Last night, I know that he's fighting to get the bill on the calendar. It was the Speaker who, for whatever reason, walked off the floor and said that the bill was being pulled. Now, I don't enjoy saying this. I consider myself a personal friend of John Boehner. And John Boehner personally has been very helpful to me over the years. So it pains me to say this. But the fact is, the dismissive attitude that was shown last night toward New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut typifies, I believe, a strain in the Republican Party. And I know this is not the place to discuss politics, but that politics seeped over into a governmental decision that was made. I can't imagine that type of indifference, that type of disregard, that cavalier attitude being shown to any other part of the country. When people were talking about real life and death situations here, just to have the Speaker walk off and not even tell us, tells an aide, the majority leader, who tells us that we tell the majority leader that the item that means life and death was taken off the calendar and is gone for this session. Now, they say it's going to be brought back up in January. Well, the fact is, let's be real, we're not in session next week. The following week is the inauguration. We're in session for 2 days. Then we have the State Union. Committees haven't even organized yet. And does anyone believe if they wouldn't vote us the $60.4 billion last night that the Appropriations Committee is suddenly going to get religion and is going to vote the full amount when we know what their attitude is, that somehow money going to New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut is corrupt money when money going to their states is so honorable? And I would just say that these people have no problem finding New York when it comes to raising money, when it comes to allocating money that they can't find the ability to do it. So I'm standing here on the House floor tonight saying we have a moral obligation as Republicans, as Democrats, as I spoke to Governor Christie, I spoke to Governor Cuomo, we've been in constant contact with Mayor Bloomberg. We cannot believe that this cruel knife in the back was delivered to our region. I have to go home this weekend and next week and the week after and see the hundreds, the thousands of people who are out of their homes, who don't have shelter, who don't have food. They're living with relatives, friends, living in trailers. This is not the United States of America. This should not be the Republican Party. This should not be the Republican leadership. And I'm asking the Speaker, tell Hal Rogers, tell these people who somehow become very sanctimonious when it comes to dealing with New York and New Jersey, that they have an obligation to do what they have to do, and that's to provide the aid and relief that we need. If there's one penny that they have a problem with, let us know. But don't walk out in the dark of the night and ignore us. I yield back my time.
That was
gentleman yields
Representative.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from New Jersey, Mr. Pallone, for 2.5 minutes.
Oh, gosh. This is absolutely outrageous.
New York for his remarks. And I really appreciate what he said, that this is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. It shouldn't be politicized. Natural disasters, responding to them, are what I've seen over my 25 years in Congress, are what bring us together to try to help people. And the Speaker should not use this opportunity to tear us apart. I was here last night when we got the words through Congressman King that the Speaker was going to pull this bill. And what the message said was, well, we can do this in January. We'll do it sometime later in January in the new Congress. As Congressman King said, we can't wait. My district was devastated by the storm. I would ask the Speaker Boehner, come to Seabright, New Jersey. Drive through Seabright, Jersey. It's a town that has less than 2,000 people. The business district is totally destroyed. One or two stores have reopened. The rest are still closed. Most of the people still have not been able to return to the town. Go to Union Beach, New Jersey, also in my district, where you can see that now everything is exposed. We still have people that do not have a place to stay, that are looking for an apartment or staying in motels.
Well, we are going back to what's going on, the live morning hearings and discussions with regard to the Republican Party evidently walking out before taking a vote on the $60 billion request for assistance to the communities in New Jersey and New York and Connecticut that suffered the horror and the destruction of Hurricane Sandy. So this was evidently 9 weeks ago. If I swear to you, I think I've told you this before, if I had to swear on my life how many weeks ago it was, I probably wouldn't have been able to figure out exactly, but it is evidently 9 weeks ago. A long time help, not one dime has gone through. So very, very fascinating that this thing should be going on. So we'll be listening in as we move forward. And in the meantime, let's find out what's going on locally here with regard to the Westchester Broadway Theater.
One of the best loved musicals of all time has returned to the Westchester Broadway Theater, the Tony Award-winning classic Fiddler on the Roof. Fiddler is the most requested show ever to be brought back to the WBT, and this heartwarming story continues to delight theater lovers around the world with an unforgettable score including If I Were a Rich Man, Tradition, Matchmaker, Matchmaker, and the haunting Sunrise Sunset. Fiddler on the Roof is appearing now through November 25th when we break to present our holiday special, The Miracle on 34th Street, from November 29th through New Year's Eve. Then Fiddler returns to play through February 3rd of 2013. And as always, your tickets include a delicious served dinner before the show with a choice of six entrees. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Make it a tradition for you and your family this year. Come back and enjoy one of the world's most beloved musicals, Fiddler on the Roof. Now through November 25th, then January 3rd through February 3rd, and only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back. This is Westchester on the Level. Let's find out what else is going on. Our sponsors... only because it, as we await, right now, Representative David Rivera, he's a Republican from the 25th District in Miami and representing Miami and Naples. We're not listening to him, but we'll continue with what's going on here locally, especially with regard to the Emperor City Casino at Yonkers Raceway.
Imagine a place alive with sights and sounds, where 5,300 gleaming slot machines play their own special music while a live concert is just about to begin. Surrounding you are all new roulette, baccarat, and craps games that put you in the middle of the action. So where are you? Vegas? Atlantic City? Nope, Empire City Casino. Join in on the excitement of all new table games, roulette, baccarat, and craps, and 5,300 slots. Empire City Casino, your home for table games. Exit 2 up the New York State Thruway.
Well, we're back. This is Westchester on the Level. My name is Jose Harris. About a quarter to the hour, we're following what's going on at the Congress. Our people are speaking before the Congress today. We've already heard from Nita Lowey and from and they're outraged at the fact that the party, the Republican Party, had walked before taking a vote on a $60 billion request to afford communities in Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey. And despite the fact of saying prior to what was going on that they would actually go ahead with the vote. So I need to take a little bit of a break, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to play something else for you, which I'd hope to really do. Let me see what I'd hoped to do literally during the holidays. And what I wanted to do was to literally play some music for you. And just bear with me a moment. Okay, I have to look this up. I definitely lost it before. Just bear with me a second here. Okay, I think this is it. And hopefully this will work out. This is a song called I Will Wait. And it's performed by Mumford and Sons. It's a British group. And we'll see what it is. Hopefully this will play well. Okay, just bear with me a second. I really love this. This music's terrific.
Mumford and Sons, live in Studio Q.
Okay.
Speaker and my colleagues, and God bless the United States House of Representatives.
Yeah.
Wow, that was unbelievable. I had fun time listening to that. I just love that their sound. It's so interesting. It's a British group. There's that saltiness of the Irish ballads, the Icelandic ballads, the Scottish aspect of it, and yet somehow that connects with the I guess the subtract that you hear in Appalachia and country music in the United States. There's a hokey aspect to it, and just a very fascinating, visceral feel to that music. And they're really just going through the roof with popularity all over. Interestingly enough, of all things, I was listening to some German publications, and I read about them there first. I'm not, you know, like an aficionado of music, but that's how I first bumped into them. And interestingly enough, there was a show on the David Letterman show, if I remember correctly, where they also performed this one hit. This is a hit after their first album, and this one's called I Will Wait. Absolutely phenomenal to see them actually perform. And if you want to, of course, they're called Mumford & Sons, M-U-M-F-O-R-D, and Sons. It's a group of four, and the song is called I Will Wait, and you could look it up and either buy their album or just listen to the YouTube, whatever turns you on, which is really good. So that was really very exciting as far as I was concerned. Let's see what else is happening on here in the morning. Dennis Kucinich.
Before I make further remarks, I want to express my support for my colleagues from New York and New Jersey. Their tireless efforts on behalf of their constituents who have suffered so grievously from Hurricane Sandy. We must unite for the people. And that's really the idea of the United States. It's the unity of states, but it's even deeper than that. It's expressive of the unity of people, that it's all for one and one for all. Our nation's first motto, E plus unum, out of many, we are one, stresses the power of unity. The idea of human unity is implicit in this nation. In my visits across America, I discovered that there is an underlying unity which binds us as Americans, which calls us forward to a higher purpose. I've also come to understand our politics divides people. The politics of polarization and hyperpartisanship has become obviously quite destructive, nearly incapacitating our government. Yet at such a time, the hunger for unity is the greatest, but the ideological difference between us widens. We need a new politics in America, which unites people, which sets aside partisan differences for the greater good of the country, which strives to reconnect with the greatness of the nation and the goodness of the American people. Now, what would that politics look like? The rhetoric would change to one of mutual respect. The questioning of motives would end. The poison system of pay to play would be transformed by public financing, and our government would be rededicated to addressing the practical aspirations of the American people for jobs, for health care for all, for education for all, for retirement security for all, and for environmental security. We need a new politics which creates jobs and celebrates the dignity of work. Our government must raise the status of working people and protect their rights. Our government must stress wealth creation over taxation, investment over debt, health over illness, peace over war, liberty over surveillance. We have the capacity of choosing and choosing again, as we are involved in the most creative endeavor of human achievement, actualizing the highest principles upon which this country was founded, and infusing those principles into self-government. Unity, one nation, under God, liberty and justice for all. A new America is waiting to emerge. Let us call it forward with the same sense of wonder and expectation that the founders first evoked the United States of America.
Gentlemen's time has expired. The chair will remind members to refrain from references to occupants in the gallery. The chair recognizes the gentleman. The chair recognizes the gentleman from New York, Mr. Rangel, for two and a half.
We're going to listen to Mr. Rangel. It's interesting to hear Mr. Kucinich reminding us of the value of the nation.
I was just asking my friend Joe Crawley, is there a legislative possibility that we could bring this to the floor? I think everybody has enough compassion with the speaker after what he's been through with his own party, trying to get some bills to the floor, to understand that anything, even something this enormous, could have fallen between the cracks. What a great opportunity to say that let's try to put these pieces together. In any event, nobody has said it's impossible to do it. And if it's just a question of pride and in terms of party unity, I can't think of anything at this time that would be better served than have all of America especially thank the speaker for reconsidering.
We're going to not listen in at the moment because we're coming to the first hour, and we'll just see what else is going on. We have to catch up with what's happening locally, so that's going to be very important. We'll see if there are any statements that are coming out of City Hall. Just bear with me a moment here. And okay, it seems to be all quiet on the Western Front, so to speak. We haven't heard anything from the courtroom with regard to the fire department and the city of Yonkers, so that's really important. We're awaiting for that. And a lot is happening today, truly, truly amazing. And okay, well, let's just see what else is happening here. I need to... One of the things that I found really appalling is the story that we had posted yesterday with regard to the an amendment requested, a petition for an amendment requested by Collins Enterprises, LLC. And Collins is a developer, as you well know. They were the first to be asked to build on the to build literally on the waterfront in the city, and that's exactly what they did. I didn't want this, unfortunately, and bear with me a second. Something came up. We didn't want that. Are we going to get to the right page? But what was interesting is that they had requested to increase the height of the buildings that they intended to build. They were at the last waterfront development plan, which was approved back in the year 2000, if I remember, and also 2006. They were permitted to build a maximum height for the structures of 80 feet. That's approximately 7 stories high. And now they want the petition, and the purpose of that petition is to increase the height of the buildings that they intend to build as they continue to build on the waterfront up to 250 feet. That would permit them to literally come up with about a 23-story building. And what's interesting is this would literally block out the entire view of the Palisades for most of the city, despite the fact that there will be these corridors, these site corridors that will be available, which will run along the line of the roads, the streets, down toward the river. So... it's just very fascinating how, you know, we were always told things in the past about developers. They'll promise you the whole world. They'll even sell their mothers into some sort of bondage as long as they can work their way into the confidences of the city. And once they get approval for their contract, can always ask for more. They're never satisfied. It's never enough. It's just a way to stick their feet into the door so that the door cannot be closed. They force their way into a situation. They get approvals, and they promise this and they promise that. They don't deliver, but they don't seem to care. And seemingly the city council or the city administration doesn't want to remember, or they choose not to remember. They choose not to acknowledge what had transpired in the past, and they continue atrocity after atrocity by making believe nothing matters. And the worst part of all is this particular petition was written on the 29th of November, validated by notary, a notary public on the 30th of November, presented to the city clerk's office, and they affixed a stamp of the 30th of November on the document. And the question now becomes, well, if that's the case, if it was presented to the city clerk's office on the 30th of November, what was the political rationale to keep the paper from coming out? Why do they force pressure? Why do they create the pressure on city to only have a few days before it's going to be presented to the public? Why isn't the public made aware of this in advance? Why does the public only get notice on the 1st of January? I think it was the 1st of January. Just bear with me a second. Bear with me a moment here. I'm not quite sure. All right, I have to relook because I don't remember now. It looks like it was right. It was filed, the filing, the petition by the Collins Enterprises was filed with the city clerk on the 30th of November. Notice of the public hearing regarding this issue was received by us on the 31st of December. We, because of just not having enough time to put it all together, were not able to put it online until the 1st of January. We did so. It was noted that the public hearing would be on the 8th of January, literally 6 days from today. It's just amazing. And so the games are continuously being played. The idea is to dismiss the public, not care one way or the other what was going on and so forth. Really, really pathetic, if you must know. So not a nice thing. But these are the sort of games that we thought would stop with this administration. And evidently, the ways of John Spencer and Phil Amaconi have now inculcated into the conduct of Mayor Mike Spano. Shame on him for permitting this BS. And if he wasn't the one that created this mess and it came from the city council, they should be exposed. Oh, but forgive me for living, because I understand that the administration doesn't want to point to anybody being responsible for anything. They just want to get on and make nice. They want to create a kumbaya moment, and I will await the first syllables of the situation. We'll have to see what gives on that. Let's see further as we continue. This is Westchester on the Level. And my name is Hezzy Harris, and let's just see if there's anyone else here speaking to Congress. Gregory Meeks at the Meeks of Queens.
And this is the United States of America, and this is the People's House. We make jokes all the time about the Senate. The Senate stood up and passed the bill. This is the People's House, Mr. Speaker. We supposed supposed to do the right thing for the people, the American people. I'm proud being on the Foreign Affairs Committee, going all over the world, talking about what we got to do and how we help folks and how we help other individuals all over this world. But we have Americans. We have Americans, Mr. Speaker, who are crying out for help, who are saying that they don't know where the tomorrow is. We have Americans, Mr. Speaker, who are worried to this day, right now, that we may have another nor'easter tomorrow. With sand gone and the dune now down, we'll have another disaster. They're asking me as their member, will our government help us? Where are you? Mr. Speaker, we need leadership. Come walk with me, Mr. Speaker. Come walk with me and see the American people that are suffering.
The chair now recognizes the gentleman from Pennsylvania, Mr. Murphy, for 5 minutes.
We're going to hold off on Mr. Murphy, but Mr. Meeks from Queens, very eloquent. It really is frightening when you look at it, and that's why I am so enamored to be working here in Yonkers. To me, Yonkers epitomizes all the microcosms of politics anywhere and everywhere. United States, as well as in Westchester, well, certainly in Westchester County, certainly New York State, in the United States, and even abroad. There is nothing that is missing from the conduct here in Yonkers that is not missing elsewhere. But again, you know the world is vast. It reaches out to 7 continents. and the United States is vast, and so is New York State. Even the county of Westchester is a big and just a big place. 1 million people live in Westchester County. I don't even know what that means. In Yonkers, we have 200,000 people. We're the fourth largest city in the state. You know, we're not talking a little nothing town here. Yonkers epitomizes the sophistication that exists in the best parts of the world. It also informs people of the depravity of something imbalanced in our society, the struggles of people, the need to remember our documents. We're forgetting. It's truly pathetic. I think that we have learned so much in the last 75 to 100 years, but that there are few people today who remember the lessons of World War II that are regarded as old hat, or Korea, or the war in Vietnam, or the time of the Depression in the United States, and the time of depressions and inflation and all those other issues that came to be, the disparity in people's ability to earn a living is very great. Some people say, well, you know, I took the right road, everything worked out for me, blah, blah, blah. Not everyone had the opportunity for the education. I'm not saying it was easy for those education, but there are so many issues, so many levels of complexity. And we've kicked everything down the road in the hope that somebody else would be able to figure it out. But guess what? They can't. And because they're too busy, you know, working for Mr. Greed. And we haven't been able to, you know, like, it always boils down to the same thing. And what it boils down to is, like, they say, well, people aren't involved in politics. People aren't involved and they're not engaged in going to vote. I don't think the vote in Yonkers, for example, required more than 15% of the city had to vote for the mayor in order for the mayor to win. That's it. That's all that was required. So 15% of the city voted for the mayor that we have, not only this mayor, previous mayors as well. So that's all it takes to actually elect somebody to City Hall to be the mayor. course, it requires money, it requires notoriety, it requires many things, but the point is, at the end of the day, you only require 15% of the vote. And then they say that people don't go to vote, they don't see the purpose of voting, they don't understand why they're voting, you can't fight City Hall doesn't respond, it goes on and on and on. And the reason for that is they're right. It will be responsive if every respective party, whoever they may be, whether it be the Independence Party, the Conservative Party, Working Families Party, a Republican Party, Democrat Party, whatever the party is, the Green Party, there are a million and one parties. The point is that the people who rise to levels of notoriety and height to the highest levels of these particular parties and others that may exist, they don't seem to make an impression on the rest of society. So it's not that these people are bad, they're just not quite up to par. And if you can't resonate, if your theories cannot resonate beyond your particular party, then you're not answering, you're not being responsive to the needs of the city or the nation. And the problem is quite often that the non-aggression pacts between Republican and Democrats, Democrats and Republicans, to give the other side an easy way out of contention, is ridiculous. And it's outrageous, and it should be made illegal. If you want to contest for office, you either will guarantee a candidate. And there's supposed to be a law with regard to that. This is what's interesting. For example, when there was someone running for the New York State Assembly, what happened to be Shelley Mayer. Now, Shelley Mayer was running for New York State Assembly. There was a special contest called in order to fill the seat that was vacated by the former assemblyman, Mike Spano, who became the mayor of the city of Yonkers. So when he stepped down from his term in office in the year 2011, in order to accede to office on the 1st of January 2012, it became noticed by the assembly that there needed to be a special election. The governor called for a special election. If I remember the date correctly, I think it was March 28th, but the date doesn't matter. What matters is there was a special election called. The Republicans waited and waited and waited in order to get a candidate. Shelley Mayer, everybody knew, was running. And then out of the blue, the Republicans came up with a candidate, and she had some issues, family concerns. So she pulls out of the race the day after final notice of candidates can be accepted. So she didn't pull out the day before. She pulled out the day after the deadline had expired, and you couldn't change it. And the reason for the deadline, I think, has to do more with printing the name of the candidate on documents that would be the ballot. So there was nothing that could be done, but it was a very easy and nice maneuver in order basically to give a non-aggression pact, you know, don't worry about it, Shelley Mayer, and you'll get elected because you're not going to have anybody running against you. And that's what happened. Now, should that be legal? I don't think so, because there is a stipulation that if you don't have a candidate ready, willing, and able to run, then it's up to the chairman of the party to have someone, to actually place himself or herself in that position in order to afford the public a choice. Well, evidently, that was not the case. And in the first case in which Shelley Mayer had no opponent, because the opponent dropped out the day after the expiration of putting in another name. I guess even at that point, the chairman of the party would not be able to place his name in place of the person that pulled out. And so that's the scam that was pulled on the public. And very, very bad news. And in fact, what's interesting is, as adept as Shelley Mayer is at whatever it is, it was inappropriate, really, for her not to have an opponent during the regular November election process. Go figure, an extension of the non-aggression pact, because that's what the parties wanted. So, and then they say that people don't go to vote. Well, they don't vote because they know these games are going to be played. And it's almost like the day will eventually come where nobody will vote. The public will not vote, and you know they will all these institutions of government, city council, representatives in Congress, representatives in the Senate, state, federal, eventually get to the point where nobody will do anything about these, and eventually they'll probably be sued for being, you know, voted by basically party people and nothing else. You know, it gets to be ridiculous. This is not what they're fighting all over the world for. This is not what they want to emulate. This is not government. This is insanity. And all the corruption comes out of government. It's interesting. You know, we talk about not having the government intrude into our lives, yet they're in every aspect of our lives. They make the contractual deals. They don't collect the money. I told you yesterday, Joe Cotter, he owes $4.1 million. He hasn't settled on it. And so what do we have out of it? Nothing. We're still owed the $4.1 million. He doesn't care because he's not paying it back to us. He just put on a solar panel roof on one of his buildings in Yonkers. And I guarantee you he's getting subsidy for that or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, because it looked good, it was a wonderful photo op. Man's still going to pay us the $4.1 million. It'll be forgotten, wink, wink. Everything is forgotten because they don't want to respond. And it's all okay. And in cahoots are a lot of the other media, too, that don't pull the important strings. They refuse to continue to go on. It's like, well, what's the story today? There is no story today that eclipses the fact that $4.1 million is owed by a developer. There is no story today that eclipses the fact that we are encumbered for a full 10 years, which five have already elapsed because this all began under Spencer and Amicone. We supposedly have a contractual agreement to pay the electric bill for Kelly. And I say, why? And in a sense, the truth is that Peter Kelly, if we're paying the bill, we're paying the bill using our discount. I'm waiting for the day when Con Ed is going to say, you know, you could have whatever deal you want with anybody and everybody, but because the electricity is being used by the restaurant, and we remember they have the figures of how much electricity was used before the restaurant was there and how much is being used by the restaurant, which is the differential between the full bill and what was at one time used. Go figure it out. If it was like $1,000 a month that was used by, and then it costs $9,000 more, so the end product is $10,000 a month. It's $120,000 a year. You know, and I hear it's a little bit higher, but it doesn't matter. The numbers really don't matter. It's the equation. So everybody knows. So they're getting a discount by paying 30% less than what they should. So in a sense, the city is encumbered Con Ed to give it 30% to a commercial tenant by forcing the Con Ed to accept 30% less for the use of electricity. And why is that? Because the city is permitting the meter to lock City Hall. Is that even legal? Because if they get a 30% discount paying the electric bill for, it doesn't mean that the taxpayer, through the whatever they pay, the normal rate they pay, is going to have to subsidize 30% differential that is paid by City Hall to the benefit of X2O, but it's 30% less than what a commercial tenant would pay. See how sophisticated and how simple these tricks are, but it's costing the public money. The question is, why is this permitted? Is this even legal? It's not legal. You and I both know it's not legal. And if it is legal, then it needs to be changed. Will the people in government today ever make those changes? I doubt it, seriously. I really, really doubt it. Well, this is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hester. Let's see if there's anybody else that came on that we would be able to look at. This is Rosa DeLauro from New Haven, Connecticut. But you get the gist of it. The gist of it is just what it is. And the point is that we're aware of what happened, and we're thankful that we were able to literally become aware of this meeting and the thought by both Republicans and Democrats on what transpired. So that's really good. The market is still high. It's about 11:20. The market's up about 225 points. Truth be told, though, it is not as high as it was earlier. Let me just quick look. Yeah, about 225 points up. It was closer to a 2% increase. Now it's a little bit less. Now it's a 1.7. So it's where it is, a little profit taking because of the quick jump. And I guess toward the afternoon, more people will get into the fray, so to speak. So we'll see where that goes. It'll just be very interesting to see where that goes. Okay, well, so that's done at that end. Then what I want to do is I want to go over some other concerns that through. Let me quickly look to see if anything else has transpired. Give me a moment here. All right, just bear with me a second. All right, I'm looking for an article in which the focus was on City Council President Chuck Lesnik. I think this is it. Yep, here it is. This is from the Yonkers Daily Voice. And the gentleman who runs the website is Matt Boltman, I think it is. Let me just see if I'm... Yes, Boltman, B-U-L-T-M-A-N. I guess you could just go to yonkers.dailyvoice.com and you'll be able to find the article. So this was posted about 11 hours ago, and the title of the article is Yonkers City Council President Outlines 2013 Bucket List. Bucket list. Okay, so it reads as follows. And I'm going to decipher it for you, with you, and see what you think. So it starts off with just 1 year left atop the Yonkers City Council. Chuck Lesnik said he's committed to making every day count in 2013. And we'll see how that happens. The council president, who is in the final year of his second term in office, which means he's limited out, said he has a bucket list of goals he wants to accomplish before his time in City Hall expires. One never knows in life where it will take you, and I want to make sure I get done what I came into office to do, he said last week. But he didn't mention what it was that he wanted to accomplish last week when he did the interview. So for Lesnick, that includes addressing goals in three areas: fiscal, quality of life, and development. But atop the to-do list is Yonkers budget woes. Well, isn't that special of Mr. Lesnick? He's concerned about Yonkers budget woes. So he says the number one priority of the city council is always the budget, he said. Yeah, it may be the number one concern and priority of the city, but evidently under the guidance and guardianship of under the aegis of Mr. Chuck Lesnick, no one has ever done a good job whatsoever ever on the budget, because all they've done is rubber stamp it, and because of that, we have never been able to tackle anything in the last 7 years of the city council presidents being on the dais. Anyway, the article continues, that will mean tackling the problem of a balance of budget that has been forecasted to be $89 million in the red. Well, isn't that special? What has Mr. Lesnick done since he was made aware of the $89 million budget deficit? And it's so interesting that he uses old numbers. Old numbers. First of all, the number that was stipulated when it was last came out was 80. It was 89 for last year. How they resolved it, I have no idea, because they never came out with the right numbers. But this year was supposed to be forecast at $86 million. And then next year it goes way up. In other words, 2014. But we'll see what happens. So those are the projections of Ravitch and what's his name? Brodsky. Anyway, so the former Assemblyman Richard Brodsky and the former Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch, big deal. They came up with their speculation, with their conjecture, and they told us what it would be, but they never told us how to resolve it. I guess they didn't feel they got paid enough in order to give us any remedy or any concepts, which they never did. Even if that was the intention, they never gave us any information. I guess they figured, oh, just to hell with it. Nobody really cares, but we'll just give you the riot act no matter what. Anyway, so lesson continues, but the city made good progress in 2012. Really, what was the progress, Mr. Lesnick? Can you just tell us one thing that he did that was showed good progress in 2002? I don't see any progress, good or bad, but whatever. You know, that's Lesnick for you, lying through his teeth every moment he can, and never, ever defining anything that he does. Just pathetic. Lesnick said, and he hopes an uptick in revenue. He hopes. Like, who gives a shit what he hopes for? The point is that the economy is not getting better, but he's hoping for an uptick in revenue and state aid combined with lower costs. Where are the lower costs? Show me the lower costs. Why doesn't he take a cut? God damn it, every time he turns around, spits out stuff from his rear end, and yet he has no way to show us how to lower costs. Why doesn't he suggest a lowering the cost on the city council? Or maybe if he doesn't want to impose that on everybody else, he should take a cut. Maybe he should take a cut, but no, he should take a cut. The point is, he's never going to take a cut. And because of that, he doesn't say that City Hall on the second floor should take a cut, because he has sold out to the administration, not only to this administration, but to the one before that and to the one before that. This man only knows how to kiss up and do nothing and make believe he's okay. And he's got goons and fools that will be there to support him. You know, I tell you one, I can't tell you how excited I am to know this will be his last year, because as far as I'm concerned, he's had 7 years of failure, 7 years of atrocity on the sensibility of a city. And you know what? If he goes somewhere else, God bless that other community that will have to suffer him for the length of time that they will. And there will always be fools out there to promote him. whether it be a Chuck Schumer or a Ms. Gillibrand or anybody else that endorses this idiot, this inept fool. He is owed nothing. But you know what? I am sure the employment agency of the Democratic Party will be there to assist this goddamn waste of time, this man who helped ruin this city because he didn't show us the right way to move forward. Oh, of course, he didn't have the power necessarily to overcome the stupidity or the trickery or the treachery of the past administrations. Certainly, it was a strong mayor form of government, and he didn't have to abide by it all. Now he's going to try to make trouble for everybody because it's his last year, and he figures with no prospects whatsoever. So he's going to try to, you know, make it so difficult for everybody that he hopes that they will kiss up to him and therefore give him some sort of a leeway. Maybe they'll give him what's her name, Shelley Mayer got, a free ride. You know, so there's nobody challenging him wherever he wants to go. That he might run for John Larkin's district because he lives in that district. There's talk that he might run for county legislator in Ken Jenkins' district. But what an atrocity! What a total atrocity! Can you imagine this waste of breath and time is going to now move up the ladder from city council president to a city councilman, or even to the county legislator, to do what? To screw with us for another year, another 2 years? How much more will he be messing with our lives? And the answer is forever and ever, as long as the party wants that to be the case. Unbelievable. Well, one thing is for sure, if Chuck Lesnik runs for anything whatsoever to do with Yonkers, we'll be there to challenge him on everything that he says. And that will be nice to know, because he will be running against his own record, with nothing worth pulling out of the drawers to say, hey, I had a hand in it. He didn't have a hand in anything. He only had the goal to step into a picture to have his ugly face put in that picture, because that's what he thought would let him slide and win the day. But no, a waste of time. And you know what? It's unfortunate that he's a Democrat, because if you believe in the Democratic principles, he certainly didn't uphold them, because he was always making a deal. When there was no need to make a deal, he made those deals because he figured, oh, that's one for my team. No, it wasn't. He never quite made it. It was always ineffective. So let's continue on with this wonderful article. And Lesnik, okay, so he's hoping for an uptick in revenue. Yeah, that'll be nice. I hope he holds his breath. And state aid, he's hoping for more state aid. You just, we don't get aid from the federal government to clean up the mess from Hurricane Sandy. So he's looking for more state aid from the state. Where's the state going to get the money? Where's the state going to get the money? See, that's the problem. In Yonkers, they gamble all the time. They don't plan. They just gamble. And they gamble with your money, the taxpayer money. The guys that are planning all this, they make out. They make out real good. Chuck Lesnik's made out. Nick Spano's made out. Mike Spano's made out. Phil Amaconi's made out. What's his name? Ralph Martinelli. Angela Martinelli, he's made out. And John Spencer, he's made out. They've all made out, except the hardworking schnook that pays their taxes. Unbelievable. Anyway, so we continue down this well-written article, but it's full of lies, because the person who presented these concepts to the author lied. And I guess this author from, Yonkers Daily Voice, just doesn't know the candidate that well. He doesn't know the city councilman that well. So he listens and he hears all this gibberish, and it seems to make a lot of sense. but there is no specificity in anything that Chuck Lesnik knows. He learned that in school. He knows how to talk a mile and never say a word. Okay, no problem, Mr. Lesnik. No problem at all. Anyway, so he says, okay, so we talked about the revenue and the state aid and the lower costs. So he's lowered no costs anywhere. And ideally, he said, the city would also be able to restore positions within the Yonkers Public School District. Well, that's very nice. Kiss, kiss. Let's see what he can do there. But when it came time to say anything about Ms. Parazio's contract being illegal, and Mr. Lesnik is a lawyer, he didn't say anything. Because he doesn't say anything. He gets along to get along. That's his shtick. That's his jive. That's what he gets along with. Get along to get along, and he'll do anything to get along. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And the audacity of creating this crap by trying to fool a reporter. Well, that reporter will eventually learn the name of the game. Just by listening to all these wonderful, wonderful words that come out of Lesnik's mouth. Anyway, he says, but it doesn't stop there. Oh, there's more. The city council president said he would also like to address various quality of life issues, like affordable housing and further reduction in guns and violence. Well, that's interesting. Wonder what he's going to do about affordable housing. How is he going to promote that? Really, where is this coming from? Unbelievable. And how is he going to reduce guns and violence in the city? How is he going to do that? He pledged the city council will soon introduce legislation meant to, quote, make a statement on guns and support gun control in 2012. No, and support gun control. Before I continue on, hey, let's face it, you know, they just passed legislation saying that it would be nice for people who smoke not to smoke at bus stop locations that are specific for pickup of children going to school. Are there any teeth to this law? No. It's really a suggestion. So this guy, the city council president, is telling us that he's going to be doing something about the quality of life. He's pledged that the city council, he's talking for the entire city council, that doesn't believe a word he says, will soon introduce legislation meant to, quote, make a statement on guns. Wonder what that statement is. What a waste of time. He rides on everybody's rear end thinking that he's going to get something out of it. Oh, please. What a waste. God help us. How much more of this crap can we take? You know, I hope everybody runs out there and votes for Chuck Lesnik. I really do. I really do. I would love to see this fool in office again. Maybe it'll be someplace far away, but close enough so we'll hear the crap that he pulls. Oh, God. Oh, and he says here, he pledged, okay, so he says, in 2012, Yonkers fielded its lowest murder rate in decades, Lesnik said, showing the city's increased efforts are helping. Really? What the hell did he do to help it? I didn't see him helping anything. Then he says, police enforcement and the snug money prevented retaliatory gang killings and made things better, he said. We want to continue in that direction. Really? Oh, stop it. Just stop it. You know, this is all police work. It had nothing to do with snug. Are you buying guns off the street? Is that your big deal? You know, those are guns that people aren't even using. Please. They're upgrading their gun arsenal. You know, they're going from the rifle, one shot rifle, to submachine guns, and that's the reason they're turning it in. As the economy improves throughout the county, we can start lifting people up on all levels of the economy. Really? What level is that he's talking about? Really? Where what level? Where's the economy lifting people up? What place is this that he's talking about? I don't know about you, but last I visited Ridge Hill, it wasn't busy, and I keep hearing all the time, it's not busy. Finally, the council president said he wants on development. That's special. We'll see if he's got something to say about this bullshit issue with regard to Collins. Is he going to permit and vote for the buildings that Collins wants to build up to 23 stories high, 250 feet? It'll be interesting if Mr. Bultman will figure it out. What a lying SOB this Mr. Lesnick is. But not a word from him. And let's not forget, folks, when that paper was filed November 30th, a petition by Mr. Collins for Collins Enterprises LLC, that was immediately afforded. That information was afforded the city council president. It says so on the document. When you pull up the article in the Yonkers Tribune, you will see it there. It will be noticed. Click on the link. You'll find it. It's on the document. It's on the PDF. And that's what it is. I didn't hear Mr. Lesnick say anything in the last month about it. Lying SOB. That's all I got to say. Lesnick's a liar. Rears his ugly head again. And finally, it says the council president said he wants to focus on development. Oh, yeah, we did that. Things like growing the retail and tax space while preserving historic buildings through development. Really? Where the hell did he do? Where did he grow the retail and tax space? Show me where he did that. Oh, yeah, I know he's in the legal business of trying to work out easement with regard to preserving historic buildings. He's making a buck off stuff, and therefore he thinks that that's supposed to fly. What a waste of time. What a stinking liar. What a duplicitous fool. And he thinks this is all going to work out. Well, that's my opinion. You vote for this fool if that's what you want. But I tell you, he has produced nothing in 7 years. Ask him for his resume, and then you'll see that he's produced nothing. I'm telling you the truth. He knows it, but he's going to keep on going as if nothing's been said, because that's the way he is. Because he knows his livelihood, his ability to make a living, is by lying to them. I hope they won't remember and refuse to hear the truth about him and think that he's accomplished something. Because, you know, they think, well, how dare anybody fly in the face of reality and truth and continue to make believe that nothing matters, because only an innocent person would do that. So I guess that tells us either that the truth is what it is, or that Chuck Lesnick is delusional. Well, if the truth is what it is, why would you want him? And if he's delusional, I wouldn't want him even less. I wouldn't want him even more for that reason. But I think he's neither delusional nor unaware. I think this is his game plan, and he's done nothing to translate anything of value for the city of Yonkers. So whomever would like him, you know, be my guest. Let's hope it's out really, preferably it would be out in Omaha, and I pray for the people out there who would even consider him. Anyway, so he says, as for 2012, he says, there was plenty to be optimistic about, Lesnick said. Really? Oh, this is a duplication of the effort that was presented to the city by none other than Mike Spano. Remember, we read that yesterday. He, too, thinks everything was hunky-dory in 2012, but he knows there's much more to do. But, again, the mayor was optimistic. He, too, produced nothing in a full year's time. Neither did Mr. Lesnick in this past year, and yet he thinks he's optimistic. That's really great. He's optimistic about what? Because so far, just deciphering what he said and what was written about him, he said nothing. A lot of wishy-washy words that mean nothing. No substance. No substance. Not one fact that you can latch on to and say, well, you know, maybe it'll work. Or I disagree. Or it doesn't matter if I disagree, but this is where he's going to go, and he thinks it's going to work for him, and hopefully it will. Well, if you can convince the other people on the city council. And there is definitely a schism on the city council. But who knows? Another game that they're probably playing you know, a schism, a make-believe schism. Great. So it says, oh, and continuing, he says, Lesnick says, the work done over the past year has provided a foundation on which the next year will continue to build. Really? What was the foundation that they built in the year 2012? What a piece of hooey. I mean, do you believe this stuff? Oh, I believe the writer because that's what he was told. I remember going through this process with Mr. Lesnick. Everything was hunky-dory. It was all beautiful. Oh, it was just great. Oh, how wonderful. Oh, my God. I was ready to kiss his ring. But nothing ever happened. And then he says, a lot of 2013, from a council point of view, will be continuing the progress made in 2012. Really, how exciting. Oh, I'm ready to go to sleep right now because this is all a bunch of lies. Shame on him. Shame on him for pulling this stuff. Unbelievable. And then he thinks it's all acceptable. Okay, so let's just see what else is happening here. Bear with me a moment. Okay. Just bear with me a second. I'm trying to find out what else is here. Okay. One more moment. This is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Harris, and I'm your host today. I see it's about 11:47. Let's find out what's going on at the Empire City Casino at Yonkers Raceway.
Imagine a place alive with sights and sounds, where 5,300 gleaming slot machines play their own special music while a live concert is just about to begin. Surrounding you are all new roulette, baccarat, and craps games that put you in the middle of the action. So where are you? Vegas? Atlantic City? Nope, Empire City Casino. Join in on the excitement of all new table games, roulette, baccarat, and craps, and 5,300 slots. Empire City Casino, your home for table games. Exit 2 up the New York State Thruway.
Welcome back. This is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Harris. What an unbelievable day. This just came out from the offices of the governor, Chris Christie of the state of New Jersey, and Governor Andrew Cuomo of the state of New York. It's a joint statement of the governors Cuomo and Christie on the congressional failure to pass Hurricane Sandy relief package. And this is what they said. Quote, with all that New York and New Jersey and our millions of residents and small businesses have suffered and endured, this continued inaction and indifference by the House of Representatives is inexcusable. It has now been 66 days since Hurricane Sandy hit and 27 days since President Obama put forth a responsible aid proposal that passed with a bipartisan vote in the Senate, while the House has failed to even bring it to the floor. This failure to come to the aid of Americans following a severe and devastating natural disaster is unprecedented. The fact that days continue to go by while people suffer, families are out of their homes, and men and women remain jobless and struggling during these harsh winter months is a dereliction of duty. When American citizens are in need, we come to their aid. That tradition was abandoned in the House last night. The people of our states can no longer afford to wait while politicians in Washington play games. This is like the epitaph on the American system. This is unbelievable. The non-responsive House of the People is just in your face. But this has been, we have been saying this about the city of Yonkers for years, and nobody thought much of it. And here you have it again. The parties are literally, they've become so out of whack. that I'm telling you this will not sit well with the public. And this is an atrocity that cannot continue. It's not a question of giving freebies to anybody. Nobody's gaming the system. If you want to be concerned about where money goes, then you need to set it up in such a way so that monies are not going to be misspent, misabused, or abused, or misappropriated. And you also have to put teeth into this so that if, God forbid, you find somebody is ripping off the system, they get put away in jail, and they get put away, and they don't come out. There's got to be a deterrence that works, and if you can't do it, then you shouldn't be promising anybody anything. Hey, if you don't like the outcome of what happens, then maybe you should tell people, look, folks, if you want to sell your property, you can, but we're no longer going to guarantee anything on the waterfront. And if you live at a certain elevation based on what they see is the scientific elevation on the seas, and in case of a storm, then, hey, we're just not going to cover it. Take it or leave it. We're sorry, New York, if you can't manage to control everything, your infrastructure, then okay, we'll pay you this time and it's all over. Goodbye, good riddance. Start moving in to, I don't know, move to Kentucky if that's what it takes, if you need to protect yourself from the waters and the hurricanes. Do whatever you need to do, but there has to be a definitive statement instead of these wishy-washy games. And then that's the whole point. Look at what's happening here. Here you have a city council president who's hoping for the best. He's hoping for the state to be able to give more money, more funding, more subsidy to Yonkers, when in reality, they're between the three states, they were promised, what was it, $60 billion? Before it was voted on, because it was never voted on. And the point is, it's not happening. It's just not happening. So where is it from? Where is the hope for things? That's why they're voting for garbage. They're voting for nothing. They're wasting everybody's time. Why don't you call it a week off? Why don't you go study the budget and see what can be cut out of there? Why don't you see if there's really any... It's not. You know, it just doesn't, does it? But the games will continue to be played. Well... So that's the story there. I needed to tell you what was going on with the two governors. Let me see if anything else has come by. And let's just see. This is an interesting comment already on Nita Lovey's comment. It says, blame, blame, blame. Too bad you can't pin this one on Bush again. Hey, Nita, how about removing all of the wasteful pork that was stuffed in that bill? And turkey first. That's the real reason why I was shot down in the first place. Those evil Republicans. Newsflash, there is no longer a two-party system in this land. It has been reduced to the haves and the have-nots. Anytime a demon crate opens his or her mouth, I find the direct opposite to be true. Posters note, I am and was never a Bush fan, just saying all it. Well, whatever. The point is that it's a legitimate question, a legitimate perspective, and the reasons there is no confidence in either party anymore is simply, and it's been like that for years, it's just that it's coming to a head, it's becoming more verbal, it's becoming more known. The point is that there needs to be a sense of responsibility that is taken by all the parties that are running candidates, and the bottom line is they had best straighten out their house. And there's another election coming up. I wonder if there's anyone there that has the backbone, the brains, and the balls to really get it done. Because you need to present a different demeanor. And it's not, it's quack, trickery or fakery. It needs to be legitimate because the public is fully aware of all the games that have been played, and they've been played for too long, and it's totally unfair. Totally unfair. And it's their money, and they have a right to be heard. And you know what? They not only have a right to be heard, but they also have a right to be recognized, and also their demands need to be looked into, and not just sloughed off as if they don't mean anything, because that's really quite important. And that's how it's done. Well, tomorrow is Thursday. Can't believe it. Already I feel like the year is flying by. Next thing I'll know, I'll wake up, it'll be November. This is going to be a tough year, I can just tell. Because it seems to be that we're getting worse and worse and worse in our managing these things that go on, and therefore it's gone awry. And I don't care what party you're on, the parties are not responsive to the public. And they should be responsive by answering the questions, not marginalizing anyone, or by not responding. Everyone needs and deserves the respect of an answer. And it had best be good, and it had best be thought out. And that's the reason we don't trust anybody, because we're not getting answers. And we're being dismissed, not us personally, but just that's the way it is. And it's the way people are being used and abused. Look, that article with regard to Chuck Lesnik, what an abusive use of power by just simply saying, well, you know, I'm the city council president, so here's my bullshit story, and why don't you just go right ahead and print it? And not knowing any better, because he was used by the city council president, that's what ends up happening. Really, really pathetic. Okay, well, let's see. I was so pleased that we had an opportunity, even though it was a chaotic day, to play Mumford & Sons' I Will Wait. I really enjoyed that. I hope you do too. Or you heard it. You can always look it up on YouTube. It's called I Will Wait. Mumford and Sons. Just wonderful. I enjoyed the I could be wrong, but I got the sense that the roots of the music were derived from the British Isles, from Ireland, from Iceland, Scotland, and then also the implant of that demeanor in musicality that you saw also in, I guess, in Nova Scotia and in Louisiana and in the Appalachian Mountains. And somehow it felt like they were able to bring it all together. So I enjoyed that. Well, tomorrow, as you well know, is Thursday. We hope that Dr. Alomari will be able to join us. A lot of things are happening very quietly on the QT in Syria, so maybe something's happening there. I'm starting to really feel very, very strongly that Jordan is, as the doctor Alomari had said, in crisis mode, and they may or may not find themselves standing much longer, but they certainly are going to after the year. Certainly the first quarter, they will probably implode. So very, very fascinating, and that will affect a lot of us here in Yonkers who have Jordanian roots, of which I don't, but the point is a lot of people do. But so that will be very interesting, and then also the assault top Egypt. So we'll speak to you tomorrow, and we thank you for bearing with us this morning. Be well and be careful. I'm going to the city council tonight. Bye.